Hello, and welcome along to Season 2 of Reaccess Hollywoo. I am a Rob Wilson type.
I'm a Samuel Cook type.
And if you're familiar with us, you'll know that we discussed two episodes of the Netflix show BoJack Horseman at a time. So per episode, it's two episodes of BoJack. And today, we're going to be looking at the first two episodes of Season 2. We skipped over the Christmas special. Should we do that as a bonus episode when this is all over? Just watch the Christmas episode.
Talk
about it.
I'll save it for Christmas after we've not done anything for months.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, we'll do that. Okay, so today we're looking at Brand New Couch and Yesterday Land. First, we're going to take a look at Brand New Couch, which is the first episode of the second season. So, Sam, what did you make of Brand New Couch?
It really surprised me because I don't remember it being like that strong an opener at all. But it's really dark. And just the whole episode is just, well, the BoJack part are just as depressing as it's potentially ever been. But after the kind of hilarious-ish season one, to come in and just be that depressing straight away is a bit of a still a bit of a shock, even knowing what I know now. I had sympathy for BoJack again and the relationship that he has with his mum, because like, she's awful in this. It has helped like going back though, after watching everything that we know now. She's really, really, really cold. I think that's the overarching like bit of the episode. You've got like bits with Todd and stuff, and obviously Peanut Butter's cone, which I think are some of the best humorous bits of the episode. But overall, it's just a really like dark and quite depressing episode.
I don't think I liked it as much as you did. I think that this was a good episode that increased the dramatic tension and the dramatic writing, but I think it moved a little too quickly for me to fully digest everything that was happening. There were a lot of new characters introduced, there were a lot of new scenarios thrown in, and lots of jokes and plot points, and everything felt a bit overwhelming at points. I thought it was still a really solid episode, and you're right in saying that I think this is one of the darkest episodes so far, because the cold open really puts this season in like a much darker context. Like, if you think about how the first season opened with BoJack talking to Charlie Rose, and the whole thing's kind of set up as a joke, and the way this season opens with BoJack watching the secretariat interview, and his mother comes in, and it's not just that... I love the way they flip the little phrase there where she says, you know, she says, "Don't sit too close to the TV," and then you think she'll follow it up by saying, "Your eyes will go square." But then what she actually says is, "Don't sit too close to the TV because it makes you cruel." And you can see where her mindset is. You can see how she's inflicting it on BoJack. There's the conversation that they have on the sofa afterwards, the fact that BoJack lives in a broken home. Like, they're just beginning to delve into BoJack's upbringing and BoJack's family life, and you can start to see the show not necessarily forgiving BoJack for the way that he is or trying to absolve him of any blame, but at least providing a reason for why he's so sort of broken inside. And then it all comes to a head during that phone conversation with his mother where she says, you're BoJack Horseman, there's no cure for that. Yeah. And which, by the way, is one of the best lines of the entire series, I think.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. Well, anything that them two say to each other, either in the cold opening or at the phone call, is just immense.
Yeah.
Powerful stuff.
Strongest bits of the episode, and I think this is also the first time in an episode of BoJack where it becomes clear that after a bit of success with horsing around, we were saying... that, you know, there were bits of last season where we were quite sad when BoJack refused alcohol or said that he didn't drink, and this is like the first episode where he literally screams, "Somebody put alcohol into my mouth, please, because the way my mother behaves with me has kind of driven me to drink."
Yeah.
And I thought that was quite sad, and I think this reminded me of, like, the stronger episodes of the first season, at least in my view, where you have chaos going on around BoJack, and BoJack's, as he is in the theme tune, he's wandering through the center, really sort of wide-eyed and bleary and disillusioned with his friends, with the chaos around him, with what's expected of him, with how much is demanded of him, what his parents did to him, all the crazy stuff that he can't help but fall into. I think the strongest elements of the episode definitely come through, because that's how I constantly felt for BoJack, where he was wandering through the middle of this tornado of chaos that goes on around him, and all he can do is stare straight ahead and hope that none of it affects him too much.
Yeah, until he goes off the deep end, which is at the end. But who knows? I mean, now that, like, I mean, I've never really, like, lost, like, any liking for BoJack, but I know that you said that events in season one and events that are to come, like, that you can never forgive him. But, like, with having a picture of his early upbringing and, like, the domestic abuse that's going on between the parents, which I think is really interesting, that they almost make Beatrice look like the evil one of the parents. The dad's always, he seems to be like wisecracking almost, and almost trying to be like the entertaining one. That's interesting.
Exiting. Looking back,
but looking back, like knowing what we know now with everything, and that them roles are again reversed, and we end up feeling like sympathy for Beatrice. But do you have any, well, after watching that and then like watching him struggle after obtaining his dream role and things, like, can you sympathise with him at all? I mean, I know that I can, because I've always been able to a little bit, but
I think I'm gonna maybe deliver a bit of a weak answer, which is basically just to say that I don't necessarily forgive him for any of the things that he's done, but as I said before, this episode at least provides a reason for the way that he is. It doesn't provide an excuse, it provides a reason.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's an explanation. BoJack isn't the way that he is because he's an outlier in his family who's uniquely broken or depressed or willing to basically destroy other people's lives so that they don't progress too far ahead of him and this kind of stuff. You know, that I can see what you mean about the way that they portray his parents, because I think, I mean, even at this stage, I think that his mother is going to become a more, it's clear that she's going to become a more prominent character, because his dad is so thinly sketched. He's just like your typical 50s abusive, you know, mean to his wife. Will eventually sleep with the house cleaner, pays BoJack no attention because he doesn't feel like it's his role, has clearly learned from the guy who raised him. The guy who raised his daughter, so his father-in-law, whose first choice when controlling a woman's emotions is to have her lobotomized in the 20s and the 30s. Yeah. And you can see that BoJack has essentially broken through history, and you go back to the first season and you rest on that quote where he says that he was born with a leak and all the good stuff fell out of him as soon as he was born, and you attach that line to what this episode explores and what later episodes explore, and then you attach it alongside his mother's line where she said there's no cure for being BoJack Horseman, and it just feels like everything that's wrong with BoJack is hereditary and inevitable, and it's what makes the darker elements of this episode so strong, that everything, this is the show really getting to grips with BoJack now, not just as a character in the present day, as it were, in the show, but also the fact that BoJack comes from disgrace, he comes from abuse, he comes from manipulation, it's in his DNA, and he is who he is because of everything that happened to him up to the point where we met him, essentially, and it makes for really, it makes for really great viewing when shows do stuff like this, where they go back in time and visit characters we don't know but have had such a huge influence on the events that we're watching. Yeah. And I think that as much as I'm not a massive fan of this episode for reasons that we'll get into, I think the BoJack stuff is really strong and treats it tonally how I wish more episodes in the first season would treat things like this, but obviously it was still finding its feet at that stage. So yeah, the BoJack stuff is really strong, I agree.
I mean, it's just, if you watch him at the start of the episode, after the opening credits, it's interesting to see him, like, you know, like, so, like, positive and, you know, bouncy, and but, and he's like trying, at least I think he's trying to, you know, make himself better. Just like dropping things in, like, you know, he's even talking to Mr. Peanut Butter like he's his best mate, like a couple of life lovers, and on about, you know, like taking the Kend off with each other. It's like, nobody speaks like that, it's great. But then
I think that none of that is real, though. I got the sense during the episode that BoJack is constantly stalling because he's hiding from something that he needs to confront. Like, he deliberately messes up every scene. Like, I think that he can't do the "what are you doing here" line properly because he doesn't want to. Because he knows that the further he gets with finishing this film, the closer he is to having to go back to who he is to...
You find another thing to reach for.
And then eventually it's all kind of... It comes to a head when you realise that he's actually been... so panicked and so eager to distance himself from his former self, because his former self is essentially his parents and he's worried about repeating history. And then his mum just goes, "You're gonna repeat history because there's no cure for you being who you are." And then he's able to kind of settle down, and all of this change stuff, I mean, it felt put on anyway, but
yeah,
as much as it may have been a bit sincere, as much as bits of it may have been sincere for BoJack, I think ultimately the bottom line is that BoJack behaves the way he does in the first 15 to 20 minutes of this episode because he doesn't want to. It's just because he wants to hide from the fact that he is who he is.
Yeah, I mean, I can see that. I mean, and every time that he's not, you know, acting and he's asked to say the line, he's not asked to say the line, he ends up saying, like, "What are you doing here?" to loads of people in the perfect way. And as soon as the lights are on and he's, you know, closer to finishing up a girl, he just, you know, he ruins it. But he really is the only person, let me have a look, in this episode that I approach liking, I think. Well, Mr. Peanut Butter's there, but not enough, I don't think. Diane, yeah. I don't like Diane, how she is with him. I think she seems, because, I mean, I think it's because I'm such a big, like, Mr. Peanut Butter fan, but I don't like how Diane is, where she's just, you know, she's looking at a watch and all that kind of stuff.
Oh, when he's looking for the ascot thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I think she's clearly, her head is somewhere else, because, I mean, first of all, she is distracted to the point where she, by the way, it's a gag that gets repeated in my house for some reason, because it's not like one of the best gags in the show, but don't trip over the cable.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, the sign that replaces her, because Diane is getting distracted. She's got this new Cordovia thing. She's clearly, I mean, she's never really been happy with Mr. Peanut Butter.
No.
That's clearly coming through now, and I think ahead is somewhere else, and it just means that when Mr. Peanut Butter is doing one of his trivial, kind of silly, irreverent things, like, "I have a traffic cone on my head," and, "Oh, I'm looking for an ascot," and, "Oh, somebody help me," and he's cluttering, and he's throwing tennis balls all over the house in search for this bandana thing that he desperately needs, and she's like, "Yeah, okay, whatever, like, I've got a career opportunity on the end of the phone."
Yeah, she's definitely losing interest. I just forgot they were this earlier, that she did. But I don't know. But you said you had, like, some negative things to say about it. I haven't got many, so...
Yeah, I think it's mainly the speed at which the jokes are delivered.
Yeah.
And combining that with the speed at which so many new plot points and characters are thrown at you, like the stuff between Princess Carolyn and is it Rutabaga?
Rutabaga, yeah.
That's all a bit hyperactive and a bit loud for me.
I can't stand him. He's the worst part of anything.
Yeah, and it all, I mean, you know, and I really like Charlie, the frog with sticky hands. But yeah, I even found him to be a bit chaotic and a bit loud in this episode, and the way they delivered the kind of hashtag this, hashtag that, while Bojack is kind of running about the place in the first, you know, sort of like in the first 10, 15 minutes of the episode, where it's like, hashtag this, hashtag that, APB, PB, brand new couch, BNC on the APB, please, you know, positive attitude.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was like, ah, okay. I mean, I get that it's supposed to be complete nonsense, but it just felt a little bit overwhelming for me. And there were, I was very much aware that when Rutabaga was on screen, or when Bojack was kind of rifling through all these hashtag jokes and all these abbreviations and that kind of stuff, it didn't quite work in the same way. I think the jokes worked best when Bojack was around Mr. Peanut Butter.
Yeah.
When they're both in that kind of scene together, because Mr. Peanut Butter has this, I don't know what it is, I think it might just come down to the voice acting in this episode, where, like, when Princess Carolyn and Rutabaga are, like, and Charlie and Bojack and stuff, when they're all bouncing off each other in the agency, in the office, in Princess Carolyn's office, whether it's over the phone, in person, whatever, it all felt a bit shrill.
Yeah.
And whereas when Bojack is around Mr. Peanut Butter, you have that same kind of pace and excitement with the gags and the jokes. But I don't know what it is, but the way that Mr. Peanut Butter speaks, it feels a lot more kind of, it felt like a nice dynamic was establishing between him and Bojack, and it felt like they were still, even though they were coming at the scene from a similar angle, they were complementing each other quite nicely, whereas I feel like Princess Carolyn, Rutabaga, they were all competing for space went in their scenes, and
I'm not
quite sure they'd managed to fully define the role that every character was supposed to play in a particular exchange. And it's nothing huge, it's nothing fatal, it's just that it happened a little bit, and there's a lot of stuff to keep up with, like Bojack's in Secretariat, and Diane's got the guy from New Cordovia ringing her up on the phone, and Mr. Peanut Butter's got a cone, and Bojack's got a new positive attitude as well as doing Secretariat, and there's a new agent in play at Princess Carolyn's place, and it all, it got a bit overwhelming, and I'm not sure how well it balances with the darker elements of
No, it's quite a
episode.
Shift. It is quite a shift, I guess, because I don't know why they just decided to chuck everybody in at once and just, let's see what, you know, but I mean,
I think it's just first episode problems, that's all. It's just, it performs, I think with this episode, it performs the function of a season premiere, and it means that sometimes you do just have to sacrifice good jokes, good character development, that kind of stuff, for plot, because you need to establish something. You need to give somebody something to look forward to, a plot thread to start, that sort of thing, and that's fine. It's not a huge issue for me, but I think obviously, when TV producers write opening episodes of seasons, they know that the episode they're writing is not going to be a defining one. It's not going to be the best one. They save that kind of stuff for the late episodes in the season. And so I'm sure the writers know when they go into this that they know that they're going to have to take an episode or two at the beginning to make sure everybody is caught up and everybody is aware. And I think that the episode performs that function well enough, and it manages to do some great character work with Bojack, and it manages to shift the series tonally from the way the first season behaved at the beginning. And you can tell we're in stronger territory, because this is one of, from memory, this is one of the weakest episodes of the second season, and it's still quite good.
Yeah.
So I do have one little thing, just one last little thing to say before you can kind of finish off about this episode. There is a line early on where Mr. Peanut Butter is, he can't see anyone in the room, because of his cone, and he's looking up, and he says, "Who is that to the left of me, making noise to the left of me?" And I thought, is this like a dodgy reference to the Steelers Wheel song or something? And then at the end of the episode, Bojack says that he's worried that he's not an actor, but he's a clown. And the line from the Steelers Wheel song is, "Clowns to the left of me."
Mm.
And I was thinking, is this something that they just put in as a nice little Easter egg, or did it have greater meaning? And to be honest, I couldn't be bothered figuring that out, because I just enjoyed it. I just, if it is just a simple little fun Easter egg for the writers to leave in there, like, to the left of me, clowns, you know, etc. I was totally fine with that just being a little thing I noticed and nothing
I mean, I don't know. I completely forgot about that. Yeah, but yeah.
And there's a great joke where Bojack says that something is not the worst thing that's happened in a theatre. The Lincoln, John Wilkes Booth thing. I quite enjoyed that little joke. What did Todd do?
He got abused a bit by Bojack, and then he was really, Kelsey loves him. Like,
oh, he has a cute little face, that's it. Yeah,
that's the only, but I mean, I'm thinking that's the only time that you see her like with a happy expression on, don't you?
Yeah,
I mean, is she based on, I want to say Sofia Coppola, me, but I'm not sure.
Honestly, I'm not sure. I'm not that well up on how film directors behave to really know. I feel like I'd need to be told and then put the pieces together myself.
Yeah, I mean, I think she looks like a little bit, but I don't know if it's just a bit of a reach.
Well, I'm sure we'll find out, and we'll be able to tell people in the next episode if there's anything out there about this.
Yeah, I mean, one last thing
I
like to pick up. When he was having his breakdown in the car, Bojack, and he mentioned his drive to Mexico, which Mexico, New Mexico, I don't know, is it?
I was waiting for this episode to make a little reference to the final episode.
Yeah.
Or in some way reference what happens. I was waiting for that, and we got it.
Yeah.
In a way, in that conversation where he's dreaming of panicking and sort of escaping and just getting the hell out of Dodge, essentially.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, I really liked it. I mean, it weren't so great on the humour aspects, maybe. I enjoyed the Bojack hashtag stuff, but yeah. I can see why it could be a bit irritating. I didn't like Rutabaga at all. I never want to see him again. He's just the worst. I don't know, he's just one of them that I am not a fan of at all. But I did like it. I liked it more than I thought.
So, any kind of closing thoughts before you grade?
No, I've kind of covered everything. It's just, it's been a bit of a stream of consciousness one, really. Obviously, I like the turn that the show's already started to take. This is what I remember changing it from being, oh yeah, that show's back on for season two, to I have to watch all this in a day and a half.
Yeah. So what would you give it?
Probably a decent 8, like a mid-range 8. Yeah,
excellent. I'm going to go for a 7.5, just like a decent 7.
Yeah.
I think, as I said at the beginning, it's one that works really hard with Bojack to increase the dramatic tension, but with all the characters around him, as much as I like the fact that they represent the chaos that goes on around Bojack while he kind of wanders aimlessly through it, I think bits of it got a bit loud and a bit shrill and a bit overwhelming, but that's all I can really criticise about it. It's just off to a decent start in season 2. Continuing the start is episode 2, which is Yesterdayland, and this feels like a much better episode for the jokes and character introductions and character development and all the good stuff that makes Bojack what it is. And I watched this episode earlier today. I watched Brand New Couch a couple of days ago from when we were recording, but I watched Yesterdayland today. So I think this episode is lifted by the fact that one of the show's very best characters, who I'm still sad wasn't around for longer, is introduced in this episode. Wanda is one of my all-time favourite Bojack characters. her introduction to this episode, I think, is just perfect. I think Lisa Kudrow's voice acting is some of the best in the show's history. I think she provides a really nice contrast to the kind of voices we've heard so far, where she's quite sort of softly spoken and quite formal in the way that she delivers her lines, and I think it separates her from quite a lot of the other characters, and it gives her a really unique, just a unique presence in every scene that she's part of, and this continues for the rest of the season. I absolutely love Wanda.
Yeah, I mean, I remember the first time I watched it, I thought that she were a bit irritating, I think, but I think that might be due to the Friends connection, where Phoebe's always been like my least favourite character, but she's still fine. But that's another completely different episode. Well, that's another show completely. You can go for years about that. I don't know. I mean, I like that she makes BoJack happy. He's obviously tortured, and he seems, well, like, he seemed to change in the first episode, but maybe not 100% like sincerely. But in this one, when they've been up talking all night and stuff, he seems like he could be a changed man. And like, and then that, and then that Alex gets involved. I don't like him, and I think the gags are lazy when he's involved after that, because obviously there's a lot of "I've been in a coma for 30 years" gags, including like one of the best, I think one of the best offhand gags in the episode, which is where Wanda's pitching loads of ideas, and she mentions David Copperfield making the World Trade Center disappear.
Oh, I know.
And David Copperfield's the problem. One of the best gags in the show for that kind of humour, I think. Very dark, very funny.
I think the gags in this episode are actually really strong, apart from the Alex KGB spy stuff.
Yeah.
I think it performs a decent function as a... just as a way of the show exploring that BoJack, as much as he's changing or trying to change, there's still a lot of the old BoJack in him.
Yeah.
And it's something that he has to confront, and it's something that he does actually admit to Wanda, where he's like, you know, I am going to be paranoid sometimes. Can you at least take me for that? And can you accept me for who I am and this, that, and whatever? And which is something that I don't think he's ever had the bravery to say to somebody before.
No.
He's always tried to be somebody else, and you know, I liked that. But the humour in it, apart from the Alex KGB spy stuff, I think this is one of the funniest episodes that we've had so far, but that I can actually remember. There were so many gags in this. We have the constant who?
Yeah.
Who?
Yeah.
And I have to hold my hands up and say that was really clever. The banner in the background with the "Oh no, they Disney-n't" for Disney. You have the whole Yesterdayland thing where it's Disneyland as opposed to just Disneyland. That means they get away with calling it Disneyland. You get the "I just met my perfect match," which then scratches, "Oh, sorry, folks, let's start that record all over again." And you have the great kind of 80s-specific references, like the Rolodex and the new Coke. Coke Zero, and they don't know what it is. And the great line where BoJack says, "Okay, I'm going to make like Snoop Dogg and drop it." "No, wait, you won't get that." And she goes, "No, I got that, like Snoopy the dog." Okay. And the best gag in the entire episode, "I haven't had sex in 30 years, I hope."
Yeah,
It's the way that they, not only is that line delivered perfectly by Lisa Kudrow, but the way they match the animation so that her eyes just open ever so slightly in fear. I think the way all of that comes together is really, really like, this show at like the top of its game, where it's willing to enter risque territory on a joke front, or even on a plot front, I think that what happens at the end of this season with regards to Penny and Charlotte is the show embracing darkness and drama in a way that I don't think many other shows would, to show how flawed the protagonist is. And I think this "I hope" joke is the show beginning to embrace darkness on a comedic level, where it starts, and this is something that BoJack does really well, where it starts to push buttons that could upset people. You know, like how South Park just kind of goes, oh, loads of people will be offended by this, let's do it, and let's really badly mishandle like a transgender teacher who's actually a lesbian but a man. Oh, and now they're a man again now, and let's equate gender exploration with people wanting to become animals, because hey, that'll offend people and upset people. Let's do this, and like they're doing it now, where it's like, let's just, I mean, that's South Park's nature, to just be the loudest, most crass, most sort of like offensive show out there. We, you know, we're in the middle of everybody, and everybody outside of us is stupid, kind of thing. Whereas with BoJack, it kind of approaches jokes in a similar way, but it does it way more sensitively and with more discipline. And this is essentially, with Wanda, this is a rape joke.
Yeah.
But the rape joke, it's not on anybody. It comes at nobody's expense. And it's delivered with a lot of precision, and it's delivered quickly. And you go, oh my god, I can't believe they've just done that. And then the scene just carries on as if it's not happened. And the show gets loads better at doing stuff like that. And I think this is one of the really early examples where they go to very dark territory, either for humour or for drama, and they pull something really special out of it. And as much as I think that this episode is another kind of place setting, ultimately, you know, the purpose of this episode is to get BoJack and Wanda to move in together, and it's to get Mr. Peanut Butter and Todd close together again. Not that they ever really fell out, but, you know, to really kind of hammer home their relationship. And as much as I think the episode has a deliberate function to reach both of those points, I think how they get there is quite creative and quite fun. Not at the most creative the show has ever been, or the most fun the show has ever been, but I think that it works on a solid level, this, as a kind of second episode of the season. Let's ease ourselves in and let's have fun with, essentially, let's have fun with plot efficiency.
Yeah, I think it's just like nice, but not nice. I mean, it's better than nice, but, you know, it's just a bit breezier than I expected it to be after the darkness of the first one. It almost feels like they should have, you know, maybe reversed the episode order, because to be eased in with something as dark as Brand New Couch, and then have this one be more, you know, one of the more, it almost played out like an 80s kind of sitcom, with, you know, you've got a big drama thing at the end where, you know, Disneyland's burning down and he needs saving, and you've got the big romantic ending and stuff. It seemed very 80s movie-ish. Obviously, you had a communist in there as well.
yeah.
But, I mean, it were enjoyable, but I don't get why they said Coke Zero, though. Like,
imagine. I think it was because it's something new that they found in the world and they don't quite know what it means.
But have they already had a Coke Zero now that they're back in the time? Is that why they're saying what's a Coke Zero? Because they're both,
yeah, they're maybe clever seen enough. An advertising hoarding,
yeah,
or something.
Yeah, I think I'm overthinking that. But I think the best gag in the episode is the in the 50s diner, like just before all that. And it's where you've got the barman when we're Swordfish, and he's called Brando.
Stella.
It's just, I forgot about that again, and I just found it hilarious.
Yeah,
again.
I had completely forgotten about that. We have another Erica moment in this episode.
Oh, that she's a paedophile. Yeah.
We have another "What are you doing here?" as well. That starts coming up a lot. Actually, I should have mentioned that in the first episode. "What are you doing here?" is like the first kind of quote from BoJack that made it into the outside world and got regular use.
No.
I would say.
Yeah.
Like, I think it's the first one that we've come across where there's loads more to come, but "what are you doing here?" I feel like that was the first one that kind of crossed over from being in the show to being in our universe. it was the first kind of gag that translated and was something that people could quote at each other. I mean, there are ones that me and my family quote at each other quite a lot. The one we always go back to for me, which we'll see later on in this season, actually, from one of my favourite episodes, whenever we're wondering about something, like when me and my mum are driving to work in the morning and we're wondering whether there's going to be any traffic, she'll go, "Ah, I wonder if there's any traffic." And then I go, "Hollywood stars and celebrities, what do they know? Do they know things?" Let's find out. And I think that "What are you doing here" is one of the first kind of running gags. It's a recurring gag, and it comes up again in Yesterday Land.
Yeah.
And I think that you can clearly see that, like, the overall quality is about the same as the end of the first season, but what's supporting it and what's backing it up is going to be much stronger later on, where the dramatic writing's just getting that little bit better. It's easier to fall back on, essentially, like the low points. I think that's it, actually, whereas, like, the low points of the first season could be quite low, whereas the low points of this season so far are a solid level. Like, they are reliable now. I feel like if the show was to enter autopilot for any number of episodes at this stage, you would still get, like, a good strong 7 low 8 kind of episode.
Yeah, and it never really drops, does it? I mean, I don't think, like, from now, I mean, like, season 1's the bumpy one. There's a couple of episodes that maybe drop below average, but if you're looking for, like, an average of all the episodes, I think you'd be around a high, like a low 8, high 7 kind of range, which is, like, testament to showing it. Because, I mean, going back, it looks like that we didn't think that season 1 was all that bad in the end after the first couple of episodes, but now it's like, are we going to put too much stock in his previous opinions and be like, I remember this being better, and it's not hit that exact mark anymore, so now we're going to rate him worse? I don't know.
I'm not sure. I think one thing that made me feel quite happy during this episode was that I noticed it was usually something I would be annoyed with in the first season, which is where they take a scenario where you could really analyse BoJack's insecurities and turn it into a dramatic episode like they would in later seasons. But they present it as a sitcom scenario. But because the comedy writing is that little bit better, and because they're actually paying attention to the more dramatic stuff away from the irreverent plot threads, and, I mean, we'll get to the stuff with what the reasons are behind BoJack pursuing Wanda. I think because everything's just that little bit better, it just means that it's easier to tolerate and it's easier to stomach when the show isn't quite hitting the notes that it does in the latter half of this season and in seasons beyond. Where something like this, Todd does a crazy theme park, BoJack thinks that his new girlfriend's friend is a KGB spy, and you think, if the first season dealt with that, I don't think you'd get a stronger episode as this.
No, it'd be lazy. It'd be lazy gags about communism in the 80s, which I don't know, I'm of the opinion that there is a couple in there still, but it'd be even worse, and yeah, it'd be like ridiculousness from all the theme park scenes. I think, I mean, I forgot initially that this was even the, I knew that it was the Wanda episode, but I forgot that it was the theme park episode, but that wasn't as bad as I remember. I just don't know why Todd was being, you know, so horrible to Mr. Peanut Butter. Like, it was almost like out of character.
I feel like they deliberately took them apart so that they could put them back together again at the end of the episode. Because I think this is one of the things left hanging over from the first season that maybe you would forget about. Like, you could be forgiven for not remembering. Like, if you watch this episode in 2015, this episode aired, right? 2014.
But
say you watch the first season and then you don't go back to it, and then season 2 comes out and you go, "Oh, what Mr. Peanut Butter and Todd doing again, and I think this episode goes, Todd and Mr. Peanut Butter established a company called PB Living, but we can't just have them be best friends. We need to take them apart briefly so that we can put them back together again. And yeah. When they're back together again at the end of the episode, no, I saved us. It's like a little refresher for the audience that Todd and Mr. Peanut Butter are in business together, going on crazy schemes.
Yeah, do you think maybe that they've kind of like almost hit like the, well, not a reset button as such, but introducing everybody almost again, because the first one wasn't really a critic's favourite, so that might have put a lot of people off, whereas now it's a must watch, isn't it? But before, you know, maybe they were just hoping that people would at least watch it from here.
Yeah, like a reboot or something.
Yeah, a bit like that, because obviously it's, you know, ever since, I believe this season, it were getting, you know, I don't know, like 80s on like Metacritic, and then it's just been going up and up and up. But the first one is, well, it's really quite low.
Yeah, I think they were aware that people perhaps watched the first season and then weren't so inclined to go back, so they have to kind of pick the points to remind people of. Like, there's nothing in these first two episodes about the fact that Princess Carolyn and BoJack used to be together.
No.
And there's nothing in these episodes about the fact that Diane and Mr. Peanut Butter, Diane and BoJack had some awkward scenes at the end of the first season in various episodes. Like, there's very little to remind you of that. I think they've picked up the points that are going to be more important as this season goes on, and hope that you just remember the rest of it. And I think that Todd and Mr. Peanut Butter's relationship in this is deliberately kind of fumbled so that they can bring it back together and have you remember that they're in a business together. And I think that's basically the only reason they do it. It doesn't, like you say, it is out of character for Todd to be so mean. I mean, I suppose he did kind of lose his mind a bit with the German bourbon stuff, but like, this felt more calculated. This didn't feel like the fame had gone to his head. This just felt like he wanted to control something that was his own, and that's not really in Todd's nature, I don't think. So
no.
But you know, it performed a function, and it was a decent plot line, and the theme park itself made for some decent visual gags, and it provided a decent backdrop for BoJack to kind of admit that he isn't really capable of complete overhaul of his personality. He should be capable of working on himself a little bit, but it feels like complete progress that he wants to make and become a different person and a better person is still just beyond him. And he just, as much as he thinks that Wanda is like a short-term comfort blanket, because she's obviously, she has no idea who he is, and obviously the opening scene, the cold open, that speed dating thing, one of his big insecurities is that everybody knows who he is now, and he's kind of lost that anonymity, so he goes after Wanda because she doesn't know who he is, and it means that he can present himself as a new person. And
yeah, it's that's a bit bad of him, isn't it? It's like really bad of him, because even I was making a note about how kind of like almost calculated, but I think by the end of it, you can almost forget about it. I think.
It's because their relationship dynamic actually works. Like I say, one of the reasons I'm actually quite sad that Wanda's no longer in the show is not only because she was an amazing character, but because she was such a positive influence on BoJack.
Yeah.
And losing that positive influence is ultimately what leads him to the point where we are at the end of season 5, where he's in rehab. I think if Wanda had stayed around and BoJack had improved, obviously we would be nowhere near where we are now.
Well, no, it'd be a completely different show.
Yeah, and all the people who've been scarred and killed because of BoJack at this point in the story, they would all be either not scarred or not dead, had Wanda managed to work any kind of magic on him.
Yeah, so, yeah, I mean, like, a massive influence. I forget, because like, I forgot, like, initially, like, that she was around for a touch longer, which like, I think that proves how long I've been since I've seen season 2. But, because I thought that when this Alex comes, that they run off together. I forgot that they move in with each other and stuff. I don't know. Yeah, I just completely We're just like, yeah. oh shit, here's this guy, they're from the 80s, they're going to run off with each other. But no, it all works out. Well, it all works out for now, for Bojack, but that's not how this show works at all. Not for this guy.
So I'm happy to give this episode an 8, I think. So we've had a decent start to the second season, a solid start.
Yeah, I probably got like a light 8.
Okay.
Yeah, so I liked it, but I think the first episode was better, just because I do prefer the more, like, I prefer my BoJack Horseman as a drama than a comedy, which
absolutely, I'm the same.
Yeah, which like nobody seems to get when I'm talking to people who've not seen it. They're like, well, or even some people that have, they're like, oh yeah, it's really funny, isn't it? I'm like, no, it isn't, no, bloody hell. And then people who just think that, you know, I'm there in the fetal position after watching a TV program about a cartoon horse who fucks a lot of women is weird, but more fool them. We should be watching.
So next time on Reaccess Hollywood, we are going to be covering season 2 episodes 3 and 4. So season 2 episode 3 is called Still Broken. The cast of Horsin' Around attends a funeral, only to find it turning into a treasure hunt. Princess Carolyn and Mr. Peanut Butter use the funeral as a schmooze fest. Season 2 episode 4, after the party, a surprise birthday party leads Princess Carolyn, BoJack, Diana, Mr. Peanut Butter to learn important lessons about love. So anything more to say this week, Sam, before we round out
those episodes next week? Especially after the party, that sounds terrifying. That sounds real, like it could hit all the feels, because no, on this bloody show, you can't find out about love on this show. It's, you know, it's a horrible thing. But no, a surprising 2 episodes. Again, I wasn't expecting to be blown away, and I wasn't blown away, but I don't know what... I was like surprised with how depressing the show got in episode 1. Episode 2, a good episode on its own, but like next to Brand New Couch, I felt a bit underwhelmed, but still quality jokes, which is always nice to be peppered in. You don't want to be in tears all the time, do you? Well, not tears, no. of sadness. No, but no, well, certainly a better start than last season.
Right, okay, so for this week and for next week too, and for all the other weeks after that, I have been and will continue to be a Rob Wilson type.
And I'm going to try and continue to be a Samuel Cook type.
And we will see you all next time. Thanks very much.
Thank you.